Look, Matt.
Where? Oh, I see. Wow.
Oh, my.
Oh, and look over there.
Wow, is that cool. Culture?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Cool.
Wow. Yeah.
Las Culturistas.
Ding dong. Las Culturistas calling.
I heard from a friend of a friend that that dick was a 10 out of 10.
What?
Oh my God! Never mind.
Wait.
Never mind.
What are you?
I was trying
from Doja Cat.
Doja Cat. Yeah.
Okay. Wait. Can I tell you? Can I be very real?
Yeah.
I thought this could have been anything because we did have sort of a Pride weekend. And so that
sure. But
you could have actually heard that from a friend.
I had a pretty sexless Pride weekend, which is not the goal. I just want to say that mine was very chaste. It was a very chaste Pride weekend. Did have some lovely little dance floor moments with some individuals, but otherwise kept it really responsible. I take that back. That's not the word I'm looking for. I kept it chaste.
It is not
irresponsible. What? Get declothed? I did not get declothed. I did not. All I did was open up my button down for a couple moments, and that was it. Anyway, what was yours like?
Mine was, sort of, to be honest with you, I've realized now more than ever, I really can't stay out past like 1. And so a lot of it was finding a friend and leaving. And whether that meant just going to have a nice meal or go fall asleep somewhere, it was sort of a lot of that. But I would not consider my Pride weekend sex filled. I certainly wouldn't.
I want to sort of debunk this whole notion that like sex is what's driving Pride. I don't think that's what's happening. I don't think that's ever been what's happened for most people. And it's okay for us to all admit that as a collective.
Yeah. I think that honestly, what I wanted out of it was to sort of be back in New York, go to all these events that I've been seeing. Like I really wanted to go to Thai Tea finally. And we made it to Thai Tea. And by we, I mean me. And I sort of like did get to experience all of it. But I have to tell you, ultimately, I'm only exhausted at the end of Pride. And I sometimes feel as if at the end of it, like, I don't know if I had fun. Now, remember, like, this comes after the end of a few days of go, 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 go. And it's a lot. And so sometimes your serotonin is sapped. But I really didn't take substances this time that really sapped my serotonin. I mean, you and I did half a Molly, and we'll say it. But you, I think, took more substances than I.
Whether or not that's true, I definitely snapped. I definitely hit a breaking point, and I'm still kind of in that space where I'm like, ooh, I had a moment where it was dark, and I'm just gonna say it. Like I was like. And I talked to our good friend, good friend, Fran Tirado about this because he was dealing with kind of a similar thing where it was like, we were both like fucking the marshals of fun and had to like concierge people's asses into like doing fun things. And I was like, it's a drain. And I don't mean to like make it sound like, I hate that I'm like framing this in terms of something transactional, but like it did feel like, I was like, things were being procured from me. And by the end, by Sunday, like circa 8:30 p.m., I was like, you guys figure out what you want to do because I have facilitated everything up to this point. And one of you figure out which fucking car to go into because I'm not about to make that decision for you.
Yes.
Can I? And I'm just being open about that with you. And you came in like a very good sister and like really talked me down. And I am very appreciative of that. But the fact still stands that like, I finally fucking like, I don't know. I bottomed out chemically, emotionally, legit, like, on a producerly level, I feel like I was producing the weekend for people. And I was like, I don't want to do this. Anyway,
I think that how it's popularly phrased is she snapped. And I think that I was happy to be there for my sister when I saw the sort of limb breaking, and I was there to hold my sister's hand because you are right. You were sort of like kind enough to like be like, this is what we're gonna do. And I think it was exciting in the beginning, but I could see even on, I think, Thursday, I was like, oh, this is going to be a lot. And I wanna say, I've been saying it for years.
Okay.
And I think I have to sort of correct myself.
Tell me.
It's be a bitch to your closest friends this Pride, but sometimes you don't even have to be that close of a friend to be a bitch to people. You can just be riding their back and be a goddamn acquaintance. And I will say this.
Be a bitch to your acquaintances this Pride, Ethan.
And I would say this. Every single person I saw this weekend, I love. And I even saw people that I didn't love before this weekend. I looked them in their eyes and I said, I love you, actually. And now I really believe it. But this is a weekend to get on the very last nerve of the people around you. And by the end, we all need a break. And I think now we have a boundary for next year.
This
concretely.
Was, of course. Well, we'll see. We'll see. I hope we all sort of take away one lesson this year, which is just pull it back a little bit, because it was be a bitch to your oomphies, as the kids say on Twitter. Like, it was a lovely experience to hear people be like, oh my God, like, you know, I know that gay from Twitter, and isn't it so nice to see them out in the wild? I love that. I love that we're able to finally externalize all of these relationships that have only played out on the internet the past year and a half. God bless. But also, I mean, ooh, careful now, because there are some things in those relationships that are not fully earned yet. And you maybe, and I'm not speaking from experience. I did not deal with this, but I've heard some people recount odd interactions where it's like, oh, this person that I've known from the internet that I'm convinced I'm in love with has rebuffed my advances and I feel like garbage. And I'm like, damn, that sucks. And I'm very sorry.
I have a couple of those where it's just like,
you experienced that?
I have experienced a sort of, so, and especially it's like when you're coming to a new city, especially when you're coming in and it's like, there's a lot of expectation around seeing people that you've talked to online. And the thing about the pandemic is I've talked to thousands of people online, and like,
okay,
I feel
Brad.
Like, I mean, like, well, you know, that's a little hyperbolic.
I know.
But I think that I've got a lot of those like truly online relationships. And I'm sure many readers can identify with this, where it's just like someone out there, it's like you really have like a firm relationship with them in terms of the DMs.
Yeah.
And then you get to the city and it's just like, there's an expectation to sort of meet up. Meanwhile, there's so much to do.
It's
so
not even to meet
much
up.
To traverse.
It's, just, it's the expectation to like match the tone of the DMs when you're in person. It's like whatever.
So.
This is like, we're not even saying anything new, but it's like, there is like an, it's like some like diluted version of like online dating, when it's like, you've been talking to the person for like months and you're like, oh, finally we're meeting and isn't this so nice? But wait, ooh, we have to like triangulate. I'm saying this word too much. I'm sorry, triangulate. But we have to triangulate based off of.
It's a rule of culture. It's rule of culture number 17. We have to triangulate.
Have to triangulate. We have to. Imperative. Kant said it's a categorical imperative that we triangulate. God.
Wait, there's an addendum to the rule. There's an addendum to the rule. As rule number 17,
as Kant once said,
we have to triangulate.
Anyway, I overall, like, it was a lovely time, but you know, the writer.
It wasn't.
There's this writer, Andrew Nguyen. They write for New York Magazine. They also perform under the drag alias Dynasty. We saw them. Oh, no, you weren't there yet. Oh, no, you did. You saw them. They did Guido. They did that number from 9.
Unbelievable. And we have to say, we had the best time at Knockdown Center.
At Fam Pride. Wonderful
Fam
programming.
Pride. Yes. It was so fun. I mean, it was incredible. And I saw, I think, the first time I really had seen something I didn't know I always wanted, which was
a bunch
a
of drag,
drag performance. Well, yes, obviously. No, I've seen drag king
performances
before. But a drag performance of A Call from the Vatican from 9, the Penelope Cruz version.
So Dynasty, we love you. But so Andrew Nguyen also is the one who has, maybe not the one, I don't want to put this all on them. But they've certainly helped start the conversation, the discourse around the Christopher Meloni as like a gay sex object.
Yes, big time.
Or not even gay, just an object of desire, and who someone who is like leaning into, and I think Chris is finally leaning into like
ass.
Knowing that like ass, like,
well, if you love
the first
ass,
time for the first time in his
love
career,
Chris Meloni, yeah.
I mean, but it was always there, like, you know, like. You know, Oz has been there all along, but now I think Mr. Meloni is really understanding what what he's providing to the community. And I think Andrew Wen was writing about this for The Cut for a long time. And now, you know, now they're bemoaning the fact that a lot of people are reaching out to them in DMs being like, have you seen this bit of Christopher Meloni news? And they're like, God, this is like the beat that I've chosen. And so this is like the bed that I've made. And I'm like, no, Andrew, it's okay. Like, you have started this conversation in a very good way. But also they said, I saw them post something on Monday where they were like, most years, and this year especially, I feel even more sad and cynical after Pride than I do like happy and hopeful. And I'm like, you know, I think deep down we all relate to this. I don't know. Is that too bleak? I'm sorry. We're starting.
No, I mean, I'm telling you.
This is a redux of our serotonin deficit episode, of our serotonin bottoming out.
And I will say this. I was looking forward to this episode because I was looking forward to checking in with you, because I actually think there might be a difference in our legit serotonin level right now, because I, for most of the weekend, avoided Molly. I think I might have, like, because it was so, because Memorial Day weekend was so much, I was like, I'm actually going to take a step back and sort of like, you know, not that this is better, but like, it was very much an alcohol forward Pride weekend for me. Like, amount of tequila sodas, I'm really impressed with myself, actually, or not impressed, but like, she can drink still. Really, really, really.
That's
in a major way. But I avoided like drugs. And I think maybe it's because I knew I had to work, I'm working this week, but I was just like, I'm happy I didn't go as hard as I have in the past, because I know what you're saying, and I don't really want to feel that way about Pride weekend,
but I find
that I often do. Like, maybe my expectations are so high, and also, you know, a couple years ago, because of World Pride, I think we had like an uncommonly good time because we had so many people there that were from, you know, everyone came up from New
York.
Were
here. Yeah.
And it was not such an ass ache to get tickets to things. Like, you know what I mean? I also think maybe you shouldered a lot of that because it was so hard to get into stuff. And, you know, you were able to like provide that experience for people. And so you did shoulder a lot of that. And like, I know, like, people are very grateful to you. I'm so grateful to you. And I also don't want you to feel some type of way about me because I came in from LA. Like, I guess I'll just go with Bowen because I just want to go with you. And there I was sort of like seeing what it was doing.
Well, not to sound whatever, but like, it was like, I'm happy to provide that service. It's not a service. I'm happy to provide that for you because I have reason to want you to be in the same places that I am,
right.
But it's literally when it's like, oh, be exploited by your furthest acquaintances this Pride. I'm like, no. I'm like, who is this? Who the fuck am I letting in?
Yeah,
I don't know this person. Anyway, I'm sorry. It's just, it was just like things being like, I don't know. And I talked to our good friend, recent guest of the pod, Celestium, about this. And they were like, you know, because they had witnessed me like being sort of like just, I mean, they had witnessed me attending to a lot of wonderful, wonderful people coming up to me and being like, wow, you have. Well, first of all, it's this thing that we talked about with 80, right? When like, when it's like someone like Kyle Mooney is at Disney World, it's like a bunch of people being like, Kyle Mooney, funny guy, love your work.
Yeah.
And then with like 80, it's like, you have changed the way that I look at myself. And then I'm like, oh shit, that is a different kind of approach. And then like, I was getting, I'm sorry to say, and I know, like, first of all, fuck off. I don't think so many of the people who are like, Bowen's complaining about celebrity rights. No.
They're not. They're literally not here right now. And so it doesn't matter.
This is it. No, they're here. They're fucking snitches. Like, who listen to that? They're not readers. They're fucking snitches.
Yeah.
And I will literally fucking pop your jaw off if I see you. I'm sorry. I'm honestly getting to the point where it's like, I'm okay with threatening violence. I'm like listening to a lot of.
We
like,
know you've always been okay. We know that Bowen Yang is violent.
Anyway. Oh my god, this is so dark. This is pure. Okay, can everyone tell that my dopamine receptors are like, no, you're not on the list. You're not allowed. Like, they're not taking any chemicals in. But fucking whatever. I'm talking about a specific kind of thing where it's just a frequency and a volume of like interactions that I feel like I, as a human being, I have to honor when people are telling me like, wow, like my self-perception as it relates to like my queer Asian-ness is like, is hitting a different level. And like, I'm so happy to have that conversation. I saw multiple people this weekend where we've had conversations where it's like, let's talk about like what this experience is as like Asian people, which is no matter what going to be heavy, but
it's, yeah, and it's not like what you want to do when there's a drink in your hand watching a drag show. Right. Exactly.
It's not a matter of what I want to be doing. It's just that like, I kind of feel like, or that I am obliged to do. It's something that you are like, kind of like conversationally, you got to engage in for a little bit.
Right.
And then over time that like accumulates to a level where like, I feel like on top of like everyone fucking hitting me up for like getting themselves into things or like picking up things from me, I'm just like, wait. I'm mentally, I don't have the fortitude for this. And like, this is the first time in, I think, like 2 years where I've been like, fuck off, stop, go away, get away from me. I can't be here. I broke mm-hmm. for the first time in years. Mm-hmm. And anyway, I'm sorry.
There's no need to apologize. I honestly, this is why I kind of was like, okay, on that last night of Sunday, I was like, let me stick right here next to Bowen because I could kind of sense.
And
because
you could sense I was like, I'm about to leave. Like, let me just say goodbye to the girls and go to the dolls and leave.
And I also like, I think I experienced some version of what you're talking about, maybe about 15% of it. And even I think it's a little overwhelming. I have too had people come up and say, you know, and it's so lovely,
it's the nicest thing in the world.
But it is so like, you also want to, I get that you also want to be able to like provide like, and I think that you do a great job, but I do understand what you're saying where it's like when you are meaningful to someone and they tell you that, like it's not happening just once, it's happening sort of again and again and again. And I also think it probably was just a different Pride experience for you, because honestly, someone sent me like, and not to literally do this to you on this episode, but someone sent me a tweet that was like, Bowen Yang just gave me propers, so I guess that's Pride. Like, and I thought that was funny. I laughed, but I was
that
like,
is a
you
metaphor.
Know, Bowen is like but you were sort of like an attraction at Pride at a certain point. And I like, it felt like people were coming up and I was just like, it's not dark because you make people proud
it's like,
but I'm not saying I don't understand what you're saying. I fully understand what you're saying. And it's got to be a little exhausting. It was a different experience.
I was happy to provide the poppers. But in that in that experience for that person, it was I was like Bowen gave me something, which I'm not, which is does not illustrate anything. It's just that like, and whatever. I'm like, this fucking dude is hitting me up. I haven't heard from him in 2 months. And all of a sudden he's like, hey, I'm going to be in New York and maybe I can come to your Fire Island. I'm like, no, stop taking things from me. Mm-hmm. Stop asking me for things. Yeah. Stop procurement. I am not here for access to like this thing for you. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not saying that like, that is not my attitude about, you know, opening poppers on the dance floor and like passing them around to people, but like, for this person to be like, that's Pride, Bowen Yang gave me poppers. I'm like, I don't want that. You saying that I'm an attraction is weird to me because it's like, ooh, like, what are you, like, are you, like, what are you extracting from me? And I know, again, this sounds like, I kind of, remember when 80, okay, not to bring it back to 80, literally sister life hashtag, but remember when 80 was like, I have never related to anything more as it relates to, like, whatever, being known than when Britney was shaving her head. I'm like, I'm about to snap, not at that level, obviously. Yeah. I'm nowhere near dealing with what Britney has dealt with anything before.
Right.
But I'm like, I need to reclaim something. I need to reclaim something. And literally, I was walking home from this thing on Sunday that I saw you at, and I was telling myself, I was like, the only way I can give back to myself is by like, this sounds so fucking soft and cloying, but the only way I can give back to myself is to like create and is to like make something for me. And that is what I'm going to do the rest of the summer. And I will probably pump the brakes on like going to these social things, being social at all. I have like been pretty bad about getting back to people's texts in the last few days, just being like, no, like someone being like, let's go to the beach. I'm like, no, we're not. I'm not. I don't want to be perceived. I don't want to be seen. I'm sounding, I mean, I guess like for the reader, it's like you guys are kind of extemporaneously listening to me sort of think through this in, you know, in real time. Like I have to re-establish, I need to like triangulate. There we go. You have to. I'm triangulating where I land based on like what that extreme version of what I kind of, what stresses me out is. And, what my ideal is. Literally, Matt, I took my half a pill on Sunday. Mm-hmm. 20 minutes later, as my role was starting, I was like, I'm not gonna be here. I can't be here. And I said bye to you. I was rolling by myself in my apartment, listening to fucking like, you know, Tyler the Creator and Doja. I was, and like fucking like Haim, mm-hmm, and Taylor. I was like, this is gonna be my musical buffet, and I'm gonna like fucking have a great time by myself in my apartment. And I had a blast. I'm sorry. Oh my God.
I said to you, when you said you were going to leave, I think I literally said to you, I was like, well, that's going to be a blast in your apartment. I was like, you're going to have such a better time in your apartment listening to you. I was like, you're probably going to be up till like 6.
Okay. But no. Yeah.
I thought you had taken a full Molly. So that's happened to me so many times where I'll like be like, yeah, sure, I'm going to do this. And then I realize I look around where I am and I'm like, oh, I don't like this. Yeah. And I shouldn't have done it. And mm-hmm. I was like, why did I do it? And then I go home and I am up fully late, like listening to music, like truly raging, rah-rahing, as I've been saying, in my apartment by myself. And it's fine. Heaven, and it's great. And I love it. And I just don't, I think, again, it's like an expectation thing. You know what I mean? It's like, and I don't want you to worry about like how it sounds to people, because it sounds like you had a Pride weekend that was very up and down. And I think that that is sort of speaking to something that everyone can understand, which is that there's a lot of expectation and a lot going on mentally, emotionally, socially during Pride weekend for everyone. And I think
so
I think it's completely understandable what you're saying. I also had it on a little bit of a pedestal because I was coming back and I realized like there's really not a moment, unless I'm like literally at something surrounded by the 3 or 4 people I really want to be with at that moment, mm-hmm, that I don't have an element of like stress, anxiety, FOMO. It's intangible. It's like an intangible thing I can't really put my finger on where I stop it's like a maximum of joy for me at like 80%. It's like in the moments I'm really enjoying myself. And then I think it's because like, I think social media plays into it. I think the fact that we've been through the pandemic plays into it. And I think the fact that, you know, like things have changed with the way you're right. You are perceived and the way you are looked at and approached. And I think that that's all really understandable. And I also think drugs.
100% it's drugs. And like, I don't know, like, don't do them. Everybody, there's no, like, there's no, like, blanket application. There's no, like, I don't know. I normally don't really do them. The occasion for doing the drugs was Pride, and that kind of is its own darkness for me, where I'm like, why did I feel that it was compulsory to do that? Mm-hmm. You know? Anyway, but honestly, I don't know if this is what you were saying, but, like, the most fun moments I had were, this is so cheesy, but I'm talking to my sister, we're with you. I was like laughing the most when I was with you. We were doing stupid fucking bits. And like, this is the difference. This, do you relate to this?
Yes, that is what Pride, wanted Pride to be.
Yes, but in terms of the approach, it's my favorite thing when you and I are together and someone is able to say, oh my God, I love the pod so much. And I'm like, that is different for me because that is like, that is the quintessence of like us and like how we like to like talk to people. And like, that is like us, like with no, like, I don't know, no weird, people relate to it in a way that feels like pure. And people people know how to approach us, you know, as a duo, sorry, eye roll, but it's like people know how to approach it because we make it very clear on this show, mm-hmm, like how we feel generally about things. And they know like, okay, like, you know, Matt's sensitive to this, Bowen's sensitive to that.
Most respectful for sure.
They're at 1000%. The readers that we meet are the most respectful people. Just 100%.
And I will say too, it's interesting because there was the first night of Pride, me being her anyway, was on Thursday night, and we went to the Boom Boom Room, y'all. Mm-hmm. We went to that Madonna thing, and I was so disheartened the second we got there because it was so crowded, you guys. It was so crowded. It was so seen, and it was so much. And I was just like, oh my God, I'm here. And already I'm confronting like what this is in terms of reality and what this was in terms of expectation. And I'm already like so tired mismatched and overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And then literally, I won't say who, but someone provided the best weed I have ever smoked in my life.
It's a previous guest of the show.
It's a previous guest of the show who is a damn legend.
He's a legend. Oh, legend. We gendered stud. Him. Oh my God. And we can't get into this, but like,
well, we can't get into it.
I was like swept off my fucking feet.
Anyways, provided the best goddamn reefer I've ever had. And I'm telling you, I could have stood there and bopped my head and not talked to anyone for hours. I was like, I am totally fine. I'm looking around and it's like, literally, it's so funny because, and I'll just say this, it's like, you turn to your left and it's like Lance Bass and you're like, yeah, you are the blueprint of this party. Like, you are exactly who's here. And mm-hmm. But I didn't feel stressed because this weed just like dropped me all the way in. And it's like, you look across the room and there's Andy and Anderson by themselves talking. And I'm like, I'm so happy that's real. Like, there they are. And then you look over and it's like, Adam Lambert's there. And I'm like, what the hell? Then Madonna comes out in her fucking blue wig looking like Sydney Bristow from Alias, crawling on the bar. I'm like, this is so funny. And it just was it all got to a point where maybe it was because this weed really came through, but I was able to just chill for a sec.
I was like chill because of the weed, despite I've never experienced the chaos of that room.
Oh, it was not a good venue for it. And we love whoever put it together.
We love the Boom Boom Room. We love everybody who made that happen. And thank you. And it was an experience, but it was like so. It was just every kind of stimulus you could possibly think of was there to fucking press down on you.
Yeah.
And it felt like being like 20,000 feet underwater. Like the pressure of it was just like, it could have crushed you.
Well, literally physically we were being crushed. And so we finally found like a little place to go. But I will say this. The aesthetic of it, like, I'm telling you, it felt like being in hell in like a cool way. You know those parties that are like, it's hell. Like, the aesthetic is the pit of hell, but in a cool way. And it's like, there's nothing to make you more afraid than the words no fear in red letters honking at you at the wall. It's like the words courage and no fear in all red letters just like blaring at you while this music played. And it's like truly red lights. And I'm like, this is just it was so aggressive that I thought once I smoked, I was like, oh, I might have just made the biggest mistake of my life, but luckily it was such good weed and I just had sat there and I was like, okay, now I'm good. And I felt like, I hope no one like looks over at me and is like, oh, that guy's not talking to anyone. I don't want to speak to anyone.
No.
And then I finally found you and like sat down and we were able to talk like my sister. But like, I was like, I'm totally good. Now that I'm like completely like zoned in, like I'm okay. And I needed that so bad because I was panicking. It was
this
a
is
lot.
How you- I know. This is how you know that was the best weed, was because 99.99999% that's the probability that it would have any other strain of weed would have throttled you the other direction and you
completely.
Would have been like, this is the word. Like, you would have been even more anxious and even more like on edge. And wow, for the weed to like fucking
relax you, actually
change your mental gravitational pull is like incredible. And God bless the supplier that night.
God bless.
And I mean this night is fucked.
Don't you let it go. I'm one struck soon on the way home. Lost me forever. Go.
I was enchanted by you. Whatever, we can't talk about that.
It is what it is. The man is hot. But okay, so here, let's just say it, people that want to know what did Madonna do, here's the answer. Mostly an auction.
It was mostly an auction. She started with Vogue, which is such a crazy move. Right? No, yeah. She did Vogue and then she did Hung Up. And then she did the auction with Zachary Quinto, who dressed in a pussy bow blouse. And God bless, the two of them raised a lot of money, I imagine. We're really proud.
I kind of like couldn't get a spot. So I went to the back and I was just like, I'm good with this. And I think I did see Madonna sort of pass through the crowd. And it was just, her madness. Tits were out. We just have to say, like, she gave you everything that you want from Madonna 2021. Mm-hmm. She was serving you. And in all the ways you can imagine. It was just, I was happy to be there once I was happy to be there. But before that, it was like, oh boy, it was packed.
Yeah, and so... this is another thing. I realize that you're listening to the two of us sort of like already like wax analytical and nostalgic about this, like, you know, pride experience that was just specific to one city. And we hope that like you listening at home, in the car, wherever you are, whatever your relationship with pride is, if you've never even participated in it, if you don't have access to programming beyond like a parade on Sunday, like it's okay. It's okay. You know, it's like,
missing anything.
We're reporting back to you, like the fun, cute little details, but overall what we're reflecting back to you, we hope you understand, is like an emotion, which is, oh God, this is a lot. This is a lot.
Yeah. Well, it's okay to be a human being, you know? Yeah. Like, I think that's what... I never realize I'm more human than one of these weekends where I'm like, okay. And then I feel crazy because I'm like, should I want to stay out until 6?
Right, right.
Yeah, and I don't... That's... Maybe there was like... And maybe I missed when I had the energy to be able to do that. But like, I wasn't really doing this type of thing when I was 24, 25. And now I'm 31 and I'm just like... By the way, this is the first weekend of my life where I ever was asked, how old are you? I said 31. And someone goes, that's okay.
No.
I laughed. I was like, I want you to know I still consider myself to be very young. And they were like, no, you are. You are. And I was like, and I don't need you to reassure me.
Oh, no. Ooh.
Well, it was a 24-year-old, obviously.
Yeah. And can we just say something? The 24-year-olds walking around these events are not in the power dynamic they believe they are. I just want to say that. I just want to make that loud and clear. It's like, I know it's part of being 24, but it's like, it would just help if you had, and I think this is why we did not stay, I don't know, whatever. It's that I had some awareness back when I was that young that like, I wasn't fucking, I wasn't shit. Like, I was a fucking idiot. I was a clown.
I think we didn't have good self-esteem then. So I think, if you're 24 and you're ready to fucking stay out till 6 and you fucking are feeling yourself, I wish that for you. I just wouldn't say to someone who says they're 31, that's okay. But also, I do thank the person that did it because it did make me laugh very much a lot. And I love it.
What is your...
31 and that's okay.
Let's just put this out there. Lately, you, Matt Rodgers, have experienced weird age fuckery with 31 and that's okay. And oh, Matt, aren't you my age?
Busy Phillips was in my 40s.
So how do you feel about that? Can we talk?
Well,
about
I'll tell
this?
You what. I did have readers finally get in my DMs and were like, We listened to the episode and we're on it. We're making you a Wikipedia page.
God bless
and
then, you all, you readers.
Then one person said, I tried, but they say you don't have enough sourced articles, babe. And I'm like, okay, well, I can't do anything about that. And again, this is not like bloating my ego. This isn't like helping me. Oh, but it's also, God. It also is like very humbling in a way that I think is great. I was just like, Yes, thank you guys so much. And apparently there is one in process now, but it's like, it's true. I don't have that much like media. Hopefully it'll change soon. And I will say, okay, so while you sort of like talked about your Pride experience, I think that honestly something happened to me last week that sort of like numbed me out in a way for Pride. Uh-oh. Where it was like, I really didn't. So the Q-Force trailer came out.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like so crazy the response it got on Twitter, because like it was so, it's so funny because it's like a 40-second trailer and people were so, like people who are on Twitter only and I'm convinced don't live off of it. And if they do, it's probably very dark and sad. But came for this trailer so hard. And it's just like, I was like, wow, this is how stupid people are. Like, they're going to watch this 40-second trailer that like Netflix put together for Pride weekend, which, you know, it's going to be a little bit like, you know, just by nature of what that is, like it's going to be a little Yaz Queenish. And I'm, you know what I mean? Like, it's never going to hit in a trailer like for these people online, like these Zoomers that needed it to be what they needed it to be. But it's just so funny the type of complaints I was getting. It was like,
well, the type of complaint is all parroted shit. Like, they said the same thing. I was telling you this. Like, it was almost word for word the same fucking quote tweeted stuff that was like when our little Pride song came out for the finale of SNL.
Right.
We were like, okay, this is like so clearly modeled after Girls Night Out by Charlie and like Holiday by Madonna. And like, it's not like a fucking like masterpiece. It's just a cutesy little song about like about what lived in Pride experiences are, which is like everyone spins out and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then the quote tweets on it were, this feels homophobic somehow. This feels homophobic somehow. This feels homophobic somehow. It was all the same stuff.
Right.
I was like, okay, like we're not even like coming up with like original takes on this anymore after the third or fourth quote tweet. It's just regurgitated fucking bolus mush. Okay.
Yeah.
That's honestly what this is. And it's just because we're in this like consumption mode now, maybe, where it's like, okay, this isn't exactly what's being what I want reflected back to me. Then let me immediately write it off as garbage and drivel. That's fine. They're allowed to do that.
Yeah.
It just seems like it seems like this thing where it's like, oh no, but like there is not any nuance beyond, I don't know why, but I hate this.
Right. And it's just what they're trying to say is that it feels like something that is that creates like a shame in them, I guess. And I honestly think it's like, well, let me just say this. And this is almost, I hesitated if I even wanted to bring this up, but you were being vulnerable. So I was just like, this is something that happened. So I wanted to talk about it, because even as the audience of this podcast grows, I do consider like, you know, the readers of the pod, like family. And like, I do always want to be honest on myself on this show. And I'm also very aware that like, you know, you and I are getting more opportunities and we're lucky. And I'm so fucking excited for you and excited for myself. When the Q-Force trailer came out, and it got like this like bizarre reaction on Twitter from a few people that made it seem like it was a lot of people like hating on it.
Oh,
Let me just make it very clear to anyone that might like have like commented on this or whatever in a negative way. You took nothing from me. I'm so fucking psyched about Q-Force. I know how funny it is. I know how good it is. I know exactly what it is. I know who it represents. I know who's involved in it. I'm so fucking excited to be a part of the cast and to have written on it, because yes, I was a big part of creating it as well as being on screen in it. So you're never going to take away how excited I am and how proud I am to be a part of it ever. Mm. I think it's hilarious. It is, if you give it a chance, exactly what you want it to be. It's an incredibly diverse, dynamic show that represents all different facets of the queer community. The core four of it is Sean, Wanda Sykes, Patty Harrison, and me. And then it's like other people in the cast play different roles. And it's got an incredible supporting cast and guest cast that hasn't been announced yet. It's incredibly fucking gay as shit. I don't care at all if you are someone who watches it and like has a problem with my character saying something happened to his butthole when he's turned on. You're really not going to like it when my character jokes about getting bread. I don't give a fuck what you think about it. I love it. If you have a problem with the fact that there are gay men out here and queer people out here talking about getting fucked. Like, I have to break it to you. I know a lot of goddamn whores. And, like, this is just going to be what this character is. And I hope that you like it. It's not the whole fucking show. But I just hope that you give it a chance because it's so funny. And if you had any idea, if any of you had any idea how difficult it is to get something queer made, how difficult it is to get anything made at all in general, but then how difficult it is to get anything queer made, you would have shut the fuck up. And let me say something else. When you make something queer, it has to check so many more boxes. And when you make something from a marginalized perspective, it has to check so many more boxes. Because I'll tell you what, if Entourage gets rebooted, no one's going to talk about the lack of diversity. But Sex and the City does, and everyone has something to say about it. Because when women make something, when POCs make something, when queer people make something, everyone has something to say. And it comes from, I think, when it comes from our community,
it's top down.
It comes
it's
from a real... It's always top down.
No, but it's top down and then it's bottom up too. We're
absolutely
in the, we're in a fucking like bear trap. It's crazy.
You know what? I understand like watching that trailer and think I'm not represented in that, and so I fucking hate it. And it's like worse for my community that it exists than it didn't. Give it a fucking chance.
God,
be
no
smarter than to
way.
Judge something based on a 40-second trailer made by, sorry, but Netflix. Give it a fucking chance to be the thing you want it to be because it is. And it was truly made for you. And I'm sorry to get like upset about this.
No.
I put it at the top of my list. And from the beginning and the start of my career, when I was making no money for years, all I ever wanted to do was make content and make comedy for people like me and in my community. And I've been so lucky to be able to be one of those people that when I log on to something that I'm proud of and I see, fuck this, this is homophobic somehow coming from what I know are queer Twitter accounts and being like, this is the reason why people, like, why we have hate crimes against our community. Guess what? Even if my voice is a little raised now and you sounds like you're getting to me, I'm only fired up to keep going because I know what I make and I know what you make, Bowen Yang, and I know what people that came up with us make, and we're coming from a place of wanting to entertain and provide and represent the queer community. And if you don't like it, then keep sitting on the fucking couch. I don't give a fuck. I don't need you.
There is just something so unsophisticated and like unformed and like pure like college freshman or aspiring college freshman to say, this is setting the movement back when it comes to anything. When it comes
to
anything.
You weren't even part of the movement to begin with. So who cares what you think?
I hear this from Asian people. I hear this from queer people. I hear this from just people, like not even queer people who are like, huh, what Bowen Yang's doing is really setting gay people back. I'm like, excuse me?
What would they know?
Your version of you know, your pseudo activism is at such a low frequency that no one's gonna fucking hear it. It doesn't register, babe. So don't even bother. Don't even fucking bother.
I mean, you know, it's like, I checked in with people that also worked on the show about it. And like, you know, I was just like, you know, I think I've been like in a little bit of denial about the fact that it bothered me because flat out, I'm like, I'm not gonna get upset. But all I ever wanted to do was make the queer community proud. That's all I ever wanted to do was like so much of what I do is like, I feel like explicitly comes from my queerness and it's been from the beginning. Like it makes me who I am. I genuinely feel like I only ever really found myself as a comedian when we started this podcast and I was able to really key into who I was and key into who we were because it was us together and it was by accident. And I felt like it's been such a long road. And so like, I'm going to be proud of my success, actually. And I'm going to be really proud of Bowen's success. And no one's going to fucking do anything to take that away. So, and it's like, you can keep watching because you're going to see more of us. So how about that?
There is no developmental process. There's still no developmental process for queer people to land in a space where they are able to make comedy and try to like, try to have every consideration and hold every consideration and take those into account while making something that makes it inevitable. Remember when BD said that? I've been quoting that in like every single thing. I've been quoting this to myself where it's when BD was like, you know, it's like when people say like, oh, like why hasn't there been an Asian person on SNL in 45 seasons? It's not because like there aren't 8 funny Asian people out there. It's because there is no process of like making sure that this will happen no matter what, mm-hmm. that it will be inevitable for whatever, an Asian person to land on a show like SNL, or for a queer person to make an animated show about spies, like perfect, you know, mm-hmm. or something that like won't elicit like fucking weird, unmoored outrage. Clearly it is unfounded outrage because these people don't know why they're mad.
Mm-hmm. They don't know what they're talking about because their complaints are factually inaccurate.
And so like, it's this thing where it's like, ooh, it's the worst kind of emotion, whether it's guilt, fear, anger, love, the worst versions of those things are the versions where you form them out of thin air, out of mm-hmm. nothing. And nothing. that's what is kind of happening a lot more now. And I just want people to like really like kind of like try to like scope out and take a holistic view of things and be like, oh wait, we're figuring this out as we go. We're making sure that this happens, that there are better versions of this, that we like, that this is a recursive thing where like people like come out with better things moving forward. We're just making this easier for the next person and the next group of people to make something even better for queer people as we go along, because that structure has not been built yet. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what we're dealing with.
I mean, you know, what's interesting is it's like, I think in our own ways, we are sort of a part of like, or maybe like a direct, like half, like quarter generation away from the first like queer mainstream version of a lot of these things. And sure. I genuinely think that like, it's like, it's almost like we don't know how to celebrate ourselves. Or no. It's like a rocky road getting
there.
We've
gotten much better. We've gotten so much better at celebrating.
Much better.
Know, remember when Guy Branum, we used to say like the only gay men who are celebrated are porn stars and drag queens?
Drag queens,
that
yeah.
That is no longer true. That is right, no longer no. true. And I think Guy would even cop to that.
Right, right. And I think that it's just, it's interesting. And this is what I hope. I hope that a lot of these accounts that are saying these things that would say something like that about your Pride sketch or any of the characters that you do on SNL, or that would be commenting on Q-Force or something that I do out there based on like some like hot dog or whatever. It's just like, I just hope that that's not reflective of like a younger queer generation.
I don't think
who
it
are
is.
Like
I,
post,
I don't think it is.
Who are like have- post celebrating queerness?
No.
It's like a rational fear that I have.
I'm not gonna know. We're not gonna like broadly apply that to everybody. No, that's not what's happening. I don't think so,
and I hope not. Yeah, you know, it just got weird for a second there. And
of course,
it's you know, I was thinking about this actually right before I got on, because I was like, oh, I was watching All Stars 6, and we were all talking about it earlier, and we were all talking about it in the chat, and I hadn't seen it yet, but you guys were like not loving it.
I didn't love it, but yeah.
And I watched it, and I was like, wait, I think I love this. I was like, I'm having fun watching it. Like,
yeah.
I love Jara Sophia. I think Akira is looking good. I think so many of the queens are looking so great. You know, and I'm just like, I was happy to watch it, and I was happy to do it. And I was like, damn, it sucks for these queens that they're being premiered on the serotonin dump weekend. You know what I mean?
Like, everyone's unhappy.
Everyone's going to be so unhappy for the next week as they finally catch up with like and download fucking Paramount Plus and like get to consume this. I'm like, I think that maybe my sisters in the chat earlier, like, and I don't deny your opinions, but I will say, like, continue to give it a shot because, you know, it's good. Although I do say I have some qualms about All Star 6 if you want to sort of transition out of this
love
moment.
It.
And
happy
we and
to,
we thank the
to.
Readers for going on this ride with us.
Thank you, readers.
It's just like little things where I'm like, some of the cast, I'm like, okay, like maybe we didn't need 13 cast members if we're going to consider this person like an all-star. And that's not shade to them. It just is facts. Not everyone is an all-star. Like if you appear on 3 episodes of your season, like, or 1, you know, you're probably not an all-star. And so the stakes of watching you on the show are just not going to be there.
Right.
So, and with 13 queens, you know, on an all-star season, you have to think that way, I think. And also it's sort of getting to the point where like with the challenges, I feel like we're repeating ourselves. Like seeing another denim runway, it's just like, or like another like blue collar runway. It's like,
yeah, I
watched both, and I was just like, okay, like this is stuff we've literally done before. And so if we're gonna be so drag and drop, not to make a pun, but I guess I did with the show, then let's like find new things to do on the runway and new challenges to do. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I feel like It's tough. It's tough to talk about Drag Race because we don't know on a decision level, like, how much of this is like a Viacom CBS thing where they're like, okay, let's put All Stars 6 on, you know, on Paramount Plus.
I'm sure it is.
And, you know, and these poor queens, like, probably can't even vocalize how they feel about it in an honest way. And I just think like Drag Race itself is going through a period where it is like adjusting. And I think like the show itself doesn't get too much credit. It doesn't get enough credit for like evolving. Like, you know, mm-hmm. like remember like, you know, 3-4 seasons ago when a lot of the discussion was around like Rue being very exclusionary towards trans queens. And it's like, now it's like you got Jiggly, you got Kylie Sonique, yeah. You got like, and even before that it was like Gia and all these. And it was just like, oh no, like it has not declared itself like we are, it's not been terribly declarative about the ways it's changed. And yet it has.
Yes. Absolutely. And
like, it is responsive to like the collective critique of it, which I think is very valid.
Extremely.
And so I don't know. I think like I was just kind of like ribbing on Drag Race on All Stars 6 to like the thread being like, oh God, like, what is this? Like, what is this talent? What just happened? And then, but then, like, also obviously finding the moments of, like, true, awe and greatness with, like, you know, Zsa Sophia, like, shaking, like, her big latex tits around. I'm like, this is the best of the show. This is the best of what the show has to offer.
Yes.
Always, you know? And so, like, there's value in watching it, of course.
And I will say, like, in that second episode you haven't seen yet, incredible lip sync at the end.
Oh, great.
Like, truly. I mean, the show, before I got on, I was actually really happy because I found myself beaming up at my television, like truly happy. And I was just like, oh, great. And yeah, do I have a note for the whole thing that it's on Paramount Plus? Because do I think it really is a big fuck you to the bars? I think it's a major fuck you to the bars who really could use this now.
Of course.
Not for nothing. And I know that like they're doing like, you know, like when it actually debuts, like the bars will do whatever. But to have it on streaming, like I understand the movement towards streaming and nothing that we say or do is going to like stop that. And right. I also totally understand, you know, they want people to watch Paramount Plus and subscribe to Paramount Plus. I get it. But I do think it's a shame that the communal experience that Drag Race was built based on is not an inherent part of it anymore, because it still was, even as people sort of like, you know, now sort of, you know, they accept Drag Race as part of the real true mainstream, like Emmy winning, repeated again and again and again culture. Like it's so like straight people do consume it so much now, and it doesn't feel like this thing that like was on Logo when there was commercials for Lubon during it. You know what I mean? Right, it's not that anymore. But I still think, like, you have to acknowledge that, like, that experience of going out and watching it, like, it's not even just so important for the show. It's so important for the communities. And it's important for these, like, businesses. So
it is the optimal experience of watching the show. Because towards the end of season 13, you know, stuff was opening back up in New York as far as, like, an outdoor experience went. You know, you and I went to a viewing outdoors, and the first time I went back, it was so funny. The first time I went to a bar to watch season 13, it was so funny to like,
yep,
turn to the table next to me during a runway and be like, oh, they're cheering for that queen that I don't care for. This is why that communal experience is so important and funny, because you're like, oh, I disagree with them, and that's great. And I'm like, oh, they don't know. I'm like, they do not have the, like, they don't have like the same standards that I do. And I'm like, this is why it's fun, because you're able to like disagree in real time and be like, and then everyone reacting, and like it was like my first genuine moment of like euphoria in the pandemic of like, oh, I'm with people again in this space that like is mostly queer people enjoying this like whatever, like show that was kind of originally made for us, no matter how mainstreamed it's gotten. I'm like, this is fun. And so like, even they tried to do that with UK when like they would just play it the next day at night. And I was like, this is, it kind of was nice, but like, I agree with you. Like, it's truly a shame that like it did not, that conversion for Paramount Plus in terms of like getting users to like sign up for it is like prioritized over. But of course it is. It's capitalism, baby.
Well, and I think going forward, like, and I would suggest to all the readers, or like hope that all the readers will like create their own experience with it. You know what I mean? And I do know that the bars are doing this. Like, they will show the episode at a certain time. And I think, you know, just like check in with your friends and you know, the places around you that are doing that, because it is fun. And like, I have to disagree with my sisters. I think that it's going to be a fun, goofy season.
I think it's going to be a fun season. I'm just like, I just don't know what's going on. I'm like, oh God, I'm like, I keep asking myself why, which I guess is a compelling thing. I'm like, why 13 queens instead of 10? Why these queens from these seasons? Why that queen again from those seasons? I'm like, there's so many question marks, and that's what's throwing me off. I'm distracted from like the pure quintessence of the show because there are so many random ass fucking things. Well, that's all.
Yes, and I would say here's what I would say. In the second episode, one of, I would say, the more random queens involved in the season, like, turns it.
Great.
And so I won't give spoilers, but it's like some of the queens, when I saw the list, I was like, oh, so it is that thing of like, you know, maybe Asia O'Hara keeps saying no, or Lagan just can't handle coming back, or Kim Chi's just, you know, feels above it maybe, or like whatever, where I'm like, this is the girls we're ending up with. But I will say, you're reminded that just because of how you do on a Drag Race season has really no reflection or bearing on how you are as a queen. And I think it's cool to see them understand what the show is and then come back with like less of a insecurity or less of a notion of what they have to do or less of a, you know, block up and come in and have fun with it. Because another thing is, it feels like because these girls all know what All Stars is and they kind of know it's like fucked and like it's like you get voted out for like stupid reasons and there's so much fuckery, they all care a little bit less, and so it's a little bit lighter in a way that's fun to watch. I think that's a really good observation.
I like that.
I want to feel stressed during a regular season. During an All-Star season, I kind of want it to be like they get voted out and it's like, got me, gal, you know, like sort of that energy, like, oh, I didn't win this silly game, you know. Despite the fact that there's real money and real stakes.
No, that is, I think maybe the producers are very conscious of that fact, that an All-Star season is just going to be like a different species of animal, because it's like, you know who these queens are, you know what you're getting, you're just seeing what the mix is and seeing how things play out. But again, the stakes aren't as crazy. Whereas like, I mean, with 13, I was like, so with it. I was glued to the fucking screen the entire time because I was
like,
this is all new. And by the way, I mean, a lot of the 13 girls were at Boom Boom Room on Thursday. And I think I turned to you at one point. I was like, wait, 13 was like one of the more incredible seasons. Like, because I was over there. I was like, oh my God, Gottmik. I was like, it's Gottmik, Candy Muse, and Simone over there.
Simone.
And then we love Gigi. And Gigi from 12 was, I think we've like filled the, we keep like the show does a good job of filling the well again with like great reality characters and great drag queens, where I'm like, I would love to see them on an, it's because what's happening now with All Star 6 is maybe a lot of people are like, oh, they've run out of great queens. And I don't think that's true. That's not true in the casting of All Star 6, because there's some great queens on 6. And I'm also like, there's plenty of like, you know, there's plenty from the reserve.
I mean,
in the future,
like even from season 13, like and Jen is the only queen from season 12 on. So it's like there's great queens from 12 who, by the way, remember that was a pandemic season and they did not really get their shine afterwards performing live. So there's great girls from 12 and 13 that are going to come on. By the way, I had a moment with Candy Muse. So I'm.
I had a moment with Gigi, and Gigi and I really connected, and like it was like my one moment of being starstruck all week. I was like, wait, I love you.
Literally, Madonna so was sweet. There, and I was like, Simone.
I was like, Simone, and it was like literally Gigi. I was like, Gigi, I have to tell you, like, you are so wonderful, and like I can tell your good energy, and like I, you know, whatever. And anyway,
Gigi is a fucking superstar.
What was your moment with Candy?
And think about Gigi being on All Stars. I mean, come the totally. Fuck on. Like, I mean, that's in our future.
What was your Candy thing?
Candy Muse is sitting in the VIP section, and by the way, she was sort of like sourpuss in the VIP section, like doing that, and I love it. Yeah. I live for it.
Yeah.
So she turns to me, looks me in the eyes, and goes like this, beckons me over, and I'm like, oh. I'm in trouble. I think I might be in trouble here because I did the Grindr recaps.
I'm literally thinking in my head
as she's calling me over. She's like, was I like a bitch to Candy Muse? I don't think so. I love Candy Muse. I think I was always like a Candy Muse fan, even though it was like an up and down season for Candy Muse. Like we can say objectively, I think I was always like pro Candy and good to her, but I guess I'm going to find out. So she whispers in my ear, were you the one that did the Grindr recaps? I was like, yes, yes, that was me. She goes, I thought I recognized you. And I was like, I want to tell you that I love you. And she lines down, gives me a kiss and goes, I love you too, baby. And I was like, thank God. I was like, that could have been a Candy Muse moment. Like, I hope she sent something that like I said, like maybe shady one time during her more off weeks. But like, love
they
Candy.
Know what it is. And she they know what it stunning. Is. Oh, she looks great.
They know what it is.
They know what it is. Candy was also there at Poppy Juice, and I was like, I respect Candy too much to like go up and like kind of harsh the vibe a little
do
bit.
Do the thing, yeah.
Do the thing, and like we were technically co-hosts of the event.
Ah, yes,
of the function. I was like, I got a little follow. I was like, okay, so she kind of saw me across the way and was like, we're doing the same job right now. This one and I. And I'm like, respect. I was always pro Candy. You know, even in the fucking like the creature challenge, the animal challenge with the fucking alien around her neck, the doll hanging around her neck. I was living for it. I was on the group chat being like, no, I don't care what you guys say. I fucking love the look. I was loving every Candy look that came out every single week. I have been pro Candy this whole time.
And also, here's the thing about Candy. Candy has it behind her eyes. Candy believes it. And so I believe it. Like, even when she came out in something that wasn't like perfect, and who even knows what that is? I said during my recaps a bunch, I was like, she is wearing what she's wearing, but like, look at how she's selling it. Like, you can tell she's her nothing. It. You can tell her nothing. And that's what I love. Like, and even in that alien getup, everyone was like, this is bad. This is one of the worst things ever. I'm like, says who?
I will say again and again,
sometimes things that are bad are the best things.
That's camp. That's camp.
That's called camp.
It's reveling in bad taste. Come on.
And also the fact that Candy was very much the show a lot of the season. Yes. And the reason
producer
why it was
Muse,
so
Candy,
good.
Producer Muse.
Candy,
don't forget.
Producer Muse. It is her name.
We understand that Simone won the soft drink challenge.
Yeah.
Sweet Tooth. But Candy, I mean, what's the case special? Glance to the side, glance back at camera. Iconic.
Without question, one of the smarter commercials. And also like something that like people that are the inherent audience at home are gonna be laughing at. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Like truly, like the case special.
Sudie and I watched that. Oh my God, Sudie and I were watching that episode together and cackling at home, being like, oh my God, this is so stupid and funny. Like Candy
Cackalusa.
Cackalusa. Oh my God, you know what? Sorry, not to like fully swerve the other direction, but speaking of stupid, like whatever. I have not really reckoned with the idea that I have been like a Conan fucking freak since day one. And Conan ending like on the perfect note. Did you watch his little farewell thing?
I did not, just because I've been swept up in it all lately, but yeah.
You specifically should watch it, because he's just like, all it is him thanking people and thanking the people who stood by him all these years. And then at one point, he's like thanking like Lisa Kudrow, and then there's a whole segment where he and like Lisa like go to like this fucking like sidebar at Largo where they met for the first time in an improv class, and that was where that was where they both recognized, they both, like, they were so young, they were like in their 20s, like both 22, like recognizing each other as like, that person's funny. I don't know, not to be cheesy, but like, I remember exactly where I was. I might have been with you when like he did like the whole like, cynicism is my least favorite quality, and all you have to do is work hard, be kind to people, and amazing things will happen. Oh my god, I'm crying. I love Conan so much. I'm sorry. Oh my god, this is like the pure surge. This is the drugs, by the way. Oh my god.
Well, I mean, he is. Like, I know that's comedy. I know that's a legend.
He's a legend, like, and like
it means, and like, it means something to you. And I was really happy that on that episode with Nikki, you were able to externalize that, because I feel like you haven't really talked about it on the podcast that much.
No, and like, no, but Raj, I'm calling you Raj, LOL, like Josh Sharp does. But like every night, every night in middle school and high school, like I would stay up to watch and like, oh my God, I'm sorry. And so I know like work hard and be kind to people is like on every fucking like basic, like withered, like the distressed wood poster in the world. But like, I don't know, like that's been like, that's like such a perfect distillation of like who he is, how he conducts himself. But then the way he ended this one, this TBS run, was the last thing he says is, my whole life, my whole career has been about finding that sweet intersection of smart and stupid. Mm-hmm. He's like, that's what I spent my whole life chasing, is that like that little like tangential point of smart and stupid. And like, that is exactly what Conan is, right? Like every Conan bit is perfectly stupid, perfectly smart. I immediately thought of you. I thought of you and Sudi. I thought of you and Sudi. It's like, those are the people that I know in my life who do that the best. And then he says, as soon as I thought of you two, he says, so if you can do what you love with the people you love, that's the closest thing to heaven on earth. Oh. And I was just, and I thought of you guys, and I was like, oh my God, this man is my hero. He's been my hero all along. And he like is the reason why I've like stuck with the people that I love, is because I knew like that was like the sauce. Like that's like what, like that's like what everyone wants. And like, I'm so lucky to have that. And I'm sorry. Oh my God. I'm like literally sobbing over Conan O'Brien, LOL.
But that, like, makes that a lot of comedy legend. Well, I love you, you know I feel the same way, and I just, and honestly, that is emotional, because it's like, he has been such a constant for so many people, and I do think, you know, I think in the late night conversation, he does get a little bit lost, because I think in terms of whenever one talks about like late night legends, it feels like only like comedians will talk about Conan. I think maybe because, you know, it got a little weird there with like his representation in late night with the Tonight Show of it all. But that man is a singular icon. And I mean, like, talk about one of the best interviewers. I mean,
oh my God.
Also, you'll hear like many, many celebrities coming out now, or notable people that have been out. They're all coming out of the woodwork right now saying that my favorite interview was the one I did with Conan O'Brien.
Yes.
Or I never felt taken care of comedically like I did with Conan O'Brien. Or I never felt like I could actually go out there and do a real bit. Like, or honestly, Conan O'Brien, like some interviews that he did, like made people's careers in ways. I mean, Aubrey Plaza, like on Conan O'Brien is like a comedic touchstone for some people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Oh, like, God, he made people feel like their funniest self, and that is a skill, and that is a talent, and that is a gift. And in order to be Bo Burnham too randomly. Absolutely.
Like, those interviews, I was like, oh, that guy Bo, like, wow. And like, it was like pure like Conan, like setting him up for like to shine. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, I think it's very real. You did not cut me off at all. I mean, I think that this is someone who means something to so many and means something to you. And so like, that's a part of this podcast, babe. I mean, is like you like letting everyone know that
Conan is one of my cultures, like moments that made me say cultures for me. 1000% down. Like 100%. Conan, like, fucking shaped like the way I related to comedy, because I was like, oh my God, who is that writer? That's Miriam Tolan, that's Brian St-. I was like getting granular about this, about comedy and about how comedy is made. Like, that is huge. Like, I was never curious about it until Conan. I'm sorry, I'm crying. Oh my God, I'm crying.
It's fine to cry.
Oh my God.
You know what's funny too, like, the person that makes me cry, obviously, Kelly. And one of my one of my favorite
Conan
things
is Mike
she
Kelly.
Ever did earlier in her career was when she was on Conan. And she sat down in the chair and she turned to the audience and she goes, "This is my favorite show, you guys." And I was like, I love her because I believe it. And then they had an interview that was so fun and good. And I could just tell she felt comfortable. And like, this is when I was watching everything she ever did, and like downloading it, truly like a little sad little fact. Like, I was like, I need to download everything on my computer. But I remember her interview with him like made me so happy. I think I watched it thousands of times, but I get it because he made people feel good. He made you feel good. And I honestly like to see him really like really get his flowers in this last week. Like, as people like say goodbye to the show or as it is now anyway, or him as he's been on television pretty much our entire developmental life, you know what I mean? Like, was really special, was very cool.
Anyway,
and
thank you for giving me that space.
Oh my God, of course. I mean,
but intersection of smart and stupid, like that is like, oh, that's like that. That is like perfect. That is like every anytime I laugh at something you say, it's because you know how you're being so smart about how stupid you're being. That is always why I laugh.
I know how to tickle her. I always know, and that's why I said my sister needs me in a vulnerable moment. So I'm gonna stay right here, sissa.
My sister.
We could sit here and we could actually like do a follow up on our Britney episode and fucking say something about that. Or we could start, I don't think so, honey, because mine has to do with that.
I think the I don't think so, honey, will sort of jumpstart the conversation. So I am actually very happy with that.
Okay. That means that we, on this episode, everyone, readers, we are moving into I don't think so, honey, right now, which is our 1 minute segment where we take something in the pop culture and we just, you know, we let it know the way we feel about it currently. And sort of, there's been a lot of I don't think so, honey, energy in this episode. And, you know, you can count on that when the sister and I get together after a harsh, long, hard weekend. But I have something to say about this.
Yeah, I would really trust. I want your take on this more than anybody's. I really do. So this is Matt Rogers' I Don't Think So, Honey, and his time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey, Jamie Lynn Spears. You need to shut the fuck up. I don't care what you have to say, because where the fuck have you been? If you are in her life just as her sister, which you say you are now, like, I'm not part of her team, I just part of her life as her sister, and I want what's best for Britney, then where the fuck have you been? Because if she's now saying that she's basically lived as like what she describes as like a slave, basically, in a situation she compares to sex trafficking, and you're in it just for your sister, then where the fuck have you been? I don't trust you at all. And I don't trust the entire family. And notice that Britney said, my entire family did nothing. She didn't leave you out of it. And last I checked, she doesn't have another sister. And you publicly are someone that we associate with her, and you're lucky for that. So I don't trust you at all. I don't think so, honey. And you need to shut up. Unless you have something real to say. That's what I have to say about that. Because hearing what Britney Spears had to say for herself broke my heart in half and in half again. And it's just so fucked up that this person has been so afraid and has felt so like closeted and restricted and tamped down that she had to publicly get on her Instagram with what I assume had to be like at least a metaphorical gun to her fucking head to say that she's the happiest she's ever been. And now the second she gets some freedom, she says that she cries every day, that she feels like she's so angry, it's insane, that she has an IUD that she won't take out of her body because she's not allowed to because of her conservatorship. Where the fuck have you been as her sister, as someone who you claim is only involved in her life in a sisterly capacity? That's not how sisterhood works. That only when someone steps up and says how much pain they're in, can you also speak to that pain?
No, it's your job.
It's your job to be there for her. If that's what you say you're there for. Where the fuck have you been?
Brittany,
I don't trust this girl at all.
So clear about it being her entire family. She like that whole statement was so thorough that it is no mistake that she said my entire family has should take full responsibility for, or they have inflicted this upon her. You know, it's like, I don't know if this was the way that you sort of consumed the story, but like, I read the text of the statement the day that it came out and I was just like, holy shit. And then not know that the audio was available. And so then I listened to that the next day and I was like, my blood went cold. I was like, oh my God. Oh my God.
I mean, it's obviously someone who has been abused for years.
The lithium thing is the most, besides the IUD, besides like Jamie Spears overall, I'm like, the lithium thing, because she refused to like do a dance move, is fucking crazy.
And first of all, it's like, it's so funny to assume that anyone in that room is going to know better about like what dance move to do than her, that her punishment for a disagreement or a difference of opinion is that she gets put on lithium, which could have, and I don't know, maybe did fuck her up forever. Like, this is so fucked up. You've got someone begging for their life and there's still a conversation about whether or not something's going to happen. We need to seriously, this is one of those moments where as a society, we need to fucking zoom out. Because if you zoom out for a second, this is crazy. It is a human rights issue. And if there's conservatorships out there that are this abusive, which she says that there are, I believe her 100%, that the people involved in them and that are victims of them do not have a platform like this, then I feel really fucking embarrassed and ashamed that we have a legal system that can't do anything about this. Like, it's just, this is crazy.
This is I Care a Lot. This is I Care a Lot. It's like, yeah, this whole system of conservatorships is only designed to exploit people.
Yeah, and look, I'm doing my I Don't Think So Honey based on Jamie Lynn Spears because, I don't know, something just...
It illustrates a lot of...
Like about her using her sisterhood with her as like, and you could never understand. So back off. It's like, no, girl, where have you been? Also, where have you been?
We can understand it on some level, on a deep ish level, because we've heard firsthand from Britney. It's like, what are you talking about? We don't understand. Britney has related none of that to you except by saying my family has fucking destroyed me. That is clearest possible expression of her relationship to you as a sister.
Right. And she was also it was a pretty long statement and she was pretty specific. I'm pretty sure if she really wanted to exonerate you, she may have. Exactly. And also, not for nothing, but when the most compassionate statement of the week is from Christina Aguilera, it's like, what the fuck is going on? Like, I don't trust this family at all. Obviously, anyone that listens to that statement or read the statement or is invested in this story at all knows it's messed up. It's just crazy to me that I'm watching the news coverage and there's still like a discussion about what's going to happen because of this legal system. You have someone begging for their life. And it's just like, well, I don't understand.
I don't fully have the best legal understanding of this, obviously, but like, the statement is so explosive that like the judge has to at least like push for some investigative, like close investigative effort here to make sure that like to verify these claims. And then from there, it's like, no fucking way do you like side with the family.
There's, also like just the fact of the matter being that he makes money off of her. She works and then makes money that goes in their bank account based on her efforts and her image and her brand. And then they are able to make decisions for her. It doesn't make sense.
Jamie's a fucking deadbeat who like couldn't fucking hack it as like some, like, I don't know what even he did. Like, I don't know from the documentary, like what she was just trying to like do some grift somewhere. And then he like came back as soon as Britney's career was popping off in the night. It's like, it's so pathetic. Oh my God. Wait, did you watch Wendy Williams? I sent you that clip of Wendy Williams, right?
I just heard her
talking about this, the whole situation. And then she goes, shame on you, Jamie and Lynn Spears. Shame on you. She goes, death to them all.
And only Wendy...
death to all of them. She goes,
Wendy can call for death and no one bats an eye.
No. And then the audience is like, oh. And then Wendy realizes in that split second that she's gone too far. And then she makes a face like, oh. Like, she's like, yeah, I said that. And there's like, yeah, and it's a
death
little...
death to them all. Title of ep.
Someone on Twitter pointed this out, and then tagged Las Culturistas. They're like, it's very Aaron Jackson energy on Las Culturistas.
Yes!
Kill them all.
I did see this tag and I didn't watch the video.
You have to watch it now. Hold on. I'm sending you the link. I want to get your real time reaction. Okay.
Okay. Okay. I'm watching.
Rehab that her father forced her into was a rehab where they knew the paparazzi was there every day. How dare you, Mr. Spears? You had me fooled. And you too, Mrs. Spears. Death to all of them.
Wendy!
Death to all of them. Wow.
Thank you, Wendy.
Honestly, oh thank God. You. That's the title of that. Death! Exclamation point. To all of them. Period. Honestly, that is
the only levity we need in the whole situation.
That's
Wendy
why
calling for Jamie and Lynn Spears to be killed.
That is why Wendy will always be number one, because she can do that and then just look at the audience like, y'all know I'm playing, but also like, not really.
Oh
death
my god!
To all of them. How dare you, Mr. Spears?
And you too, Mrs. Spears.
And you too, Mrs. Spears.
Death to all of them.
That really is Aaron. Kill them all.
Oh my god, I kill them all. Okay, wow. That was
Bowen is crying again, but this time for joy.
Oh my god.
But I would feel remiss if we didn't revisit our Britney episode with this, because honestly, when she came out and said the documentary really made me sad and I wish everyone would stop talking about me, I almost felt badly about doing that episode, because I was like, maybe we are talking about someone that, like, you know, we don't really know what the situation is. Maybe she didn't speak to it. But no, you know what? Sometimes a spade is a full fucking spade.
Yeah.
The woman is like indentured. It's crazy.
I can only like follow the story as it keeps developing, because it's just like, if I spend too much time thinking about like what her like life has been, it would just destroy me. I can't do it.
It's just so
sad. Which is not my way of like ignoring the story, obviously. It's just that like this is so this is one of the great tragedies of show business, I think. One of the far as like an individual story goes, like this is among the most tragic stories of like a performer, someone who like all they wanted to do was entertain, being brought down so low that like we as a society have to like think about how we have thought about them over the years, how what we can do to help. Like I think everyone understands that we are living, that we're watching something play out that is like fucking, that is like really, really like a huge story. I'm not saying anything new.
It's immoral. Like,
to me, it feels like the same like kind of cultural conversation we should be having when we were talking about like, you know, like fucking, I don't know, anything having to do with Michael Jackson. You know, it's like this is mm-hmm. like this is something like that has like such a sadness to it that we have to like confront what that means in our like, you know, celebrity media diets. Anyway,
absolutely. Okay. I mean, it was. surreal to hear, and obviously hashtag free Britney as always. And I will say, in game show last week, which by the way, if anyone came out to game show last week and is coming this Friday, it's been so exciting to perform again. But the boys lip sync to Stronger by Britney, and I was just like, this woman has given us so fucking much.
So much.
Like, I mean, she's
so
just
much.
That song is just so rousing, and it like I was just there's just so many millions of people across the world that support her and want her to live a free life. Like, it's just, anyway. Do you have something for, I don't think so, honey, this week.
I do.
Well, that's good to hear. Mm-hmm. So everyone, this on the episode, death to them all.
Death to all of them.
To all of them. That's what it is. Death Death. To all of them. This is Bone Yang's. Not for nothing. I don't think so, honey.
Not for nothing.
And his time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. Ice at parties. Why are you always running out? Why is it always bring ice? Oh my God, we're out of ice. Bring ice. And yet it is a truth universally acknowledged that if you buy ice, no matter how much ice you buy for a party, no matter what size, you're gonna run out of it. What is going on there? What is the witchcraft that is happening? Was it Agatha all along? Probably, because the ice keeps disappearing. And I swear to God, I bought 5 bags of ice from the grocery store to make sure that all of my guests' drinks this weekend at my house party were cooled and chilled to their satisfaction. And still, to no avail, even with an hour left for the party to go, my guests had to mix drinks with no ice in them. And I wept for their experience because I'm a better host than that. And ice, you will not make me a fool of a host. That's one minute. Why does ice always run out of parties?
It's because, first of all, there's many elements. It famously melts.
It's not even that it melts. It's that no matter how many...
It's that it goes away. I was being facetious.
It's that it goes away. I know.
So listen, when so many people want to drink, they're going to want ice for that. And so you'd say, you know, you got a bunch of people at this party and everyone wants a drink, even if it's not alcoholic. You're going to need to put ice in your drink. In fact, everyone needs ice all around, especially on a hot day like that day. And I will say this.
Like that day.
I love the city of New York.
No, I know what
you're saying. I have never been more sure that I made the right decision. This is boring. But I'm telling you, I came back to LA because I have to do a job this week. I'm like, yeah, this is where I live. And fucking thank God. The heat is bad. Okay. The humidity is bad. It is dark. It is dark-sided.
And that's why ice disappears for the Pacific Northwest right now. That's true. We pray for the Pacific Northwest right now, which is going through an insane heat wave.
I lift my hands and pray. Mandy Moore, walk
I
to remember.
I lift my hands and pray. To be only
and
yours.
I will say this. To be only yours, I know now you're my only hope. One of the best songs of all time. One of the most beautiful women of all time. One of the great films. Talking about how stressed you are, like sort of getting people on lists for parties and getting attaining tickets for parties, full on hosted like a big party at your apartment.
I think you did too much.
And so you know what, Bowen? Boundaries for next time. Yeah. I said next year, maybe don't even do Pride. Take yourself on a fucking vacation. I'll go with you.
I'm doing that. I'm talking to like people who like have just gone on trips, like queer people who are like, oh no, I went away. I'm like,
yeah.
Yeah, you did the right thing.
Yeah.
Because there's no FOMO if you're on vacation, if you're like on a fucking beach.
It's actually Real Culture number 103. There's no FOMO if you're on a vacation and you're on a fucking beach.
It's true. Absolutely. So yeah, that's what we're doing next year. And anyway, I just... Thank you, readers, for listening to this whole episode. Matt and I were working through things in real time, our emotions, our little post-mortem, as they call it. About Pride, I cried about a straight white man who has happened to be very influential to my life.
Some of them are good.
Conan's one of the best ones, I gotta say. Conan's one of the best ones. We talked about Britney. We talked about Drag Race. We talked about what you said we would talk about actually was the new Doja Cat album, and we did not talk about that. But quick thoughts.
Quick thoughts is, okay, just in my thoughts in a nutshell, Doja, I think with this album, is officially like, she's going for Rihanna status. And what I mean by that is she's going to be like occupying that niche that Rihanna occupied, which is I will come out with pop hits, an album wall to wall of pop hits like every year. Like, I do think that Doja like is feeling herself right now, where it's like that last album had all bangers. This album has all bangers, and we will be seeing her live performances on every music show, because you know she can deliver that. I think Doja is here for ubiquity. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like, wall to wall, this is great. I think she is the maybe like in the in one of the premier pop girls right now.
Yeah,
and I love her problematic ass.
She's kind of like creating the new a new pop persona of like we know her to be chaotic, but someone who is like, and this is maybe similar to Rihanna. Like, I don't give a fuck. I don't care.
Uncancelable. You say I'm canceled. I say I'm not.
And so I don't know. I just think this is a very, I mean, this is an album where she, where I think the statement is I can do it all. Because I think Hot Pink, her last like full like studio album release was like, this is me like giving you Dr. Luke, like bops.
Yes.
And this time she, I think he's only on three, he's only on the first three singles. He's only on Kiss Me More and Need to Know and that one with The Weeknd. I don't know what it's called.
You're right.
Yeah. But the rest of the album, which I think there's some great fucking songs on it.
Oh, get into it. Yeah.
I don't do drugs. Love to Dream is so beautiful. Love to Dream is a gorgeous song. Ain't Shit is a talent. So good. No, like She's Here to Stay and like, you know, like we can all, I think this is what we need to come to as like, as a community and as a culture, like it's okay to say she is fucking nuts and that like her past is like very checkered and questionable. That is not a contentious point. That is a moot point, in fact, as they call it. Like it is part of her like persona now that she is like all over the damn place. And like that is maybe like the value, that's the appeal, that's whatever. But like the work stands for itself in a way. Like, the work is good. I also think this is an interesting conversation that we might need to, like, unpack later on. But, like, the new Tyler, the Creator album, excellent. It's also, Josh and I were talking about this. Josh Sharp and I were talking about this, where it's, like, Tyler is such an interesting person to talk about in terms of, like, who owns homophobia, right? It's, like, he was on Goblin, like, saying faggot, faggot, faggot. Like, got Eminem, like kind of like teased it out of Eminem again to call him a faggot and like then like kind of brushed it off. Like Tyler is someone who and then the ultimate gag was surprise, I'm gay too. Like what absolves what? Does it absolve anything? Who gets to like be homophobic now? It's like really interesting. I think Tyler is like a really interesting study in like what like a popular artist can do. Not can do, but like how they like occupy their queerness. Can they like, because like part of the reason why I think Tyler is successful is because he's been able to navigate the industry as someone who has not announced that he was queer but then kind of like come out like once he was established. It's so interesting. I see him as such a great artist, but someone who is like kind of like in the way that like we think about Doja, like, but wait, like did you like bypass a lot of stuff? Or not bypass a lot of stuff, but like, are you like letting things slide off like in a way that is like confusing to people? Like, are we confused, and is that helpful or is that hurtful? I don't know. There's just a lot there.
May have to follow up on this one.
But Matt, and anyone, our readers, if you partake, just like smoke a bowl, or honestly, if you don't do drugs, drink a tea, listen to it. It's got jazzy, loungy. It's like Igor, but less of a through line. It's so good. You would love it, Matt. I think.
I mean. That, and also, I before we go, I just wanted to briefly touch on Lil Nas X's performance at the BET Awards. God. I mean, talk about breaking new fucking ground. And also, the trailer for his album being a Marvel rip.
I loved it.
And so I was also funny. Like, you know what? Like, in such a short time, he's amassed all these, like, images and clips that can come together in this, like, thing that the entire MCU can, like, do as well. And it's like, he's saying, like, I'm this big. And I'm doing this on this stage. And that was like, I would be nervous to do what he did on that stage in private sometimes.
Oh my God.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, talk about like announcing yourself. And then I've loved the way he's responded to like, haha, LOL, by the way, fuck you. Criticism.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful.
Like, by him being like, yeah, you know what? I'm living myself out on stage and finding myself out on stage because you actually, like, as a society, never allowed me to do this. And, like, I'm finding it because y'all are too afraid.
No, Saeed
Jones had an amazing tweet about this.
Oh, I read that one. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, just, like, I'm loving it. I'm loving it. And it's, like, anyway, it sort of calls back to what we were talking about before. It's, like, no, actually, fuck you. I'm going to enjoy myself and do this the way that I know how, from the heart first out and like from the loins forward.
It's so like, wait, can I? Okay, I'm gonna share with the readers my little encounter story. Okay.
Okay.
And I told you this, right?
I'll recognize it immediately once you start talking about it.
Season finale after party, we go up to each other,
mm-hmm.
and then he's like, hey, like, I can tell you have good energy. Cause we had done like the Pride song thing. And like, I was in the booth with him, like when he was recording his verse, he's like, I can tell you have good energy. And I was like, you do too. And then I said to him, I was like, and by the way, I was like, I've never said something like this, but I'm really glad the kids have you. And he was like, and he like looked at me and he like smiled and nodded. And then he was like, whatever. And then he was like, let me give you my number. And then he texted me happy pride out of nowhere one day, like 3 weeks ago. And I was like, happy pride, Montero. I was such a little like fucking fan. I was like, happy pride. I was like, this person is really fucking smashing shit down in a way that is perfect. And he knows what it's about. He knows where it's coming from. He knows what he's doing, why people are reacting the way they're reacting, and why it's okay that they're, and why it has nothing to do with him. He's like, it has everything to do with why you guys hating each other, like hating yourselves, all just because I fucking kissed a dude, mm-hmm. you know? And you're still talking about me giving Satan a lap dance because you're like fucking, you have no like mooring in your own lives and your own spirituality and your own belief system to like understand why you're mad. Like that's, it's beautiful. I love it.
And ultimately, maybe everything we've said we should just take back in pride was excellent after all, because that got to take place.
I agree. That was worth, I mean, Lil Nas X doing that made my pride bottom outs all worth it. All worth it.
Listen. Here's what I'll say. I love you, Bowen Yang.
I love you.
And Rogers,
I love
ultimately,
you.
Like, I'm coming back on the first, and I know you'll be leaving shortly after that, but I'm excited to see you for a few days. And I'm happy I got to see you and be there with you for Pride. And I'm proud of you.
It was the great joy of my year to see you and spend that time with you. I'm proud of you.
And we'll have more time soon. And you better stay tuned, readers, because there is some good stuff.
There's some good coming, stuff coming.
And some gay stuff coming. Okay, oh. If you can believe that.
Believe that. But for now.
At the top of my lungs, I'm giving it back. Wow, the fact that we ended it with that song.
Huge. That's
very queer.
Very queer.
Happy Pride.